something right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
Hey, yeah, I'm stuck in the middle with you. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Brad Show. The Brad Show on the air, maybe, via Raw Radio. Oh, man, this is seat-of-your-pants radio. I probably can't even talk over this music. Can we turn it down? I'll tell you what, if you're out there listening anywhere right now, I would record this show, because this one is a Hall of Fame broadcast. And, man, anything could happen. Ladies and gentlemen, it's... Hey, guys, kill that music for me. Just hit the stop button. Just hit the stop button. There you go. All right. Ha! It's the unstoppable power, ladies and gentlemen, of citizen investigative blogger fueled by the indefatigable truth of internet journalists cutting straight through the mainstream crap live on the airwaves, we think, but I'm not sure. I assure you, ladies and gentlemen, I am on live. I am not on a telephone. However, it may sound like it's a telephone connection because the internet in this studio is not working. I'll explain why in a little bit. But it is time to be the media because, my friends, someone has got to. So, the Brad Show is now live on the air. I'm Brad Friedman, blogger at bradblog.com. And you're listening, or you may be listening, to the premiere episode of The Brad Show in cooperation with rawstory.com. We are spawning together to create a media hellstorm known as Raw Radio. We are broadcasting, in theory, coast to coast and around the world via the IBC satellite radio network. Rawstory.com has some direct links to our live web stream. You can go to ibcradio.com or ibcrn.com. We're also on shortwave at 7.330 megahertz. Cell phones, mobile broadcast network at mymbn, as in my broadcast network.com. We also welcome an affiliate down in Florida. We don't have a complete affiliate list, and I will explain why. Down in Florida, 1490 AM, Bradenton, Tampa, Florida. That's WWPR. We're running live Saturday nights from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. This is our first show on the air, and it's going to be a rough one. We are live here before we ever thought it was possible. RawStory.com and myself, Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com, had been talking about putting together a radio network for quite some time. We were looking at launching in May or June. And then we got a call from the network, and they said, hey, can you guys go live Saturday? We said, of course not, but we'll do it anyway. I happened to be on the road in an undisclosed location, had to figure out how to get on the air. Whether I am or not, I don't know. We found a studio out here. We are now theoretically live on the air, and theoretically we will have our first guest momentarily. If we have our show... rolling tonight, we'll have a hell of a show. Hour one, we've got vote rigging software whistleblower Clint Curtis. Hour two, vote fraud investigator Andy Stevenson. Hour three, rawstory.com deputy managing editor and investigative journalist Larissa Alexandrovna. And by hour three, maybe we'll have figured this thing out. Hour four, we've got Tribune Syndicate editor and columnist Robert Kohler. So, this is an exciting night if we're out there and if this thing is working. I just got a note from John Byrne, the editor of RawStory.com, who says, oh, good, we're coming in good. That's good to hear because guess what? We're internet journalists, but we have no internet connection in the studio. Anyway, and I don't even know if Clint Curtis is on the line. Is Clint Curtis waiting for me on somebody's phone line? Okay, good. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do what we just had an ad that John Byrne faxed over from Raw Story because, like I said, we don't have internet here. We are actually listener-supported. We've had 24 hours to prepare for this broadcast. Can you tell? But we're up and rolling, and so we're paying for it all out of our own pocket, except for these ads just in. Thanks, John Byrne, and thanks, RawStory.com, and thanks, the readers of BradBlog.com. I hope you're blogging about this mess, and I'll look forward to reading that later. So our first ad, actually, from Case, Ohio, Citizens Alliance for Secure Elections. They're a nonpartisan statewide grassroots association of volunteers that advocates for fair and accurate elections. Fair and accurate elections in America? What, are they crazy? And they support a voter-verified paper audit trail. Imagine that. You vote, there's a ballot printed on paper that comes out that you can go back and recount. Holy cow. I'm in favor of this Case Ohio group. I think they're great. Case Ohio, they're located on the web at caseohio.org. All right. Let's see. What else do we have to shake things up until we can get Clint Curtis here live on the line? I'll give you an idea of who Clint Curtis is. You folks who are listening, I'm guessing we've got a lot of BradBlog.com readers out there. Clint Curtis is a whistleblower who claimed in an affidavit that we broke on BradBlog.com to have been asked to create vote rigging software.
Hello?
Back in 2000. Holy cow, is that Clint Curtis?
Hello.
Mr. Curtis, are you there?
I'm here. I can barely hear you. You're really soft.
Are you? Well, you're really loud, but, you know, hey, it's Seat of Your Pants Radio. That's why we call it Raw Radio. As a matter of fact, I even hear jazz in the background. Hey, Ken. Is that jazz CD still running? I bet it is.
Jazz in the...
Now it stopped. Hey, Clint, sit
sit
tight where you are. I'm going to introduce you as if we know what we're doing here, okay? Clint is... Thank you. Clint Curtis is a software programmer and whistleblower who rocked the vote last year from Tallahassee to Capitol Hill when he filed a sworn affidavit first reported at BradBlog.com. Thanks for the plug, alleging that he was asked by then-Florida Speaker of the House, now U.S. Congressman from Florida's 24th District, Tom Feeney, to create a vote-rigging software prototype. Curtis, at the time, worked for Yang Enterprises, Inc., where Feeney was the general counsel and a registered lobbyist, even while he was Florida's House Speaker. No conflict of interest there. Clint also testified under oath before members of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee about his extraordinary claims, and most recently... Just about a week ago, it was announced in the St. Petersburg Times, and we can confirm here at BradBlog.com and The Brad Show that he has now officially passed a polygraph test with flying colors, and it was administered by the retired top polygraph examiner with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Clint Curtis, are you still there, or have we lost you?
Still here.
My friend, you are the very first inaugural guest... on The Brad Show. Thanks for joining us, Clint.
Glad to be here.
Hey, let's start quickly, because there may be some folks who aren't familiar with the story out here. What exactly happened in 2000, as you have explained it to me so many times?
Well, in 2000, I was working at Yang Enterprises, which is a company in Oviedo, Florida, a little bit north of Orlando.
Right.
And... we have all kinds of, had all kinds of state contracts, NASA contracts, that sort of thing. And at the time, like you just explained, we had a fellow working for us called Tom Feeney, who was the registered lobbyist, the head attorney for the company, and also Speaker of the House for the Florida Legislature. And his main job was to come in and feed us contracts. So
to find out
what the legislature was looking at doing, or he would invent something, and then he would ask if we could do it.
And what did he ask you to do in October of 2000?
October of 2000 was one of the first meetings I had with him, and he came in, and he wanted a prototype of a voting software that could actually flip the votes, so that the you could decide who was going to win, and punch a few hidden buttons on the screen, and suddenly you're the winner.
Okay, so he asked you to create a vote flipping program, or was it something else specifically that he asked you to do?
Prototype of a voting program.
What was the reason that he gave to create this voting program?
He didn't really give a reason. All he gave was specifications of what he was looking for.
Okay, so why would you go and write a program that could flip the vote?
Well, I assumed, you know, because he's a Republican and I'm a Republican and they're Republicans, and, you know, obviously Republicans are good people, then it must be that the evil Democrats were thinking about, they must have had some sort of machine that he thought they might be kicking out there that would flip the vote, and my job was to build it and write down how you would prevent that from happening, which is what I did.
And so you went away, you wrote this program, you came back the next day, you gave it to your CEO, and what did she have to say to you?
Well, the program itself is really simple. It takes, you know, hour to write tops, and that's if you're slow, probably not even that long. The actual documentation I wrote took the rest of the day on how what you would do to prevent the vote from being flipped or altered or messed with at all. You'd have to have non-proprietary software, open source code where everyone could look at the source code, decide it's right, compile it on the spot, hash it so you knew that it was the correct one, and then put it on non-proprietary hardware.
Right.
Had to have receipts, all this kind of thing. So I give this to her and start explaining this to her, and she says, you don't understand, in order to get the contract, we have to be able to hide the manipulation of the source code, because part of the problem is you can't hide the manipulation of source code. Source code, human-readable code, does the math. You can see where it's flipped.
So
the reason for that is because it's intended to manipulate the vote in South Florida, control the vote in South Florida, I think is exactly what she said.
So she had wanted you to create the software. Feeney had asked you to do it, and you were supposed to keep the vote flipping routines hidden inside the source code. Is that correct?
Correct.
And is that possible?
No, that's not possible. You could write 50,000 lines of code and make it difficult to look for. You could hide it, you know, in various modules. It would take a long time. But if you had competent programmers that was looking for it, they would find it. Because in reality, all the thing does is it adds one to a total. Adds one. That's all you do. So if there's anything in there besides adding one, something's wrong.
Okay. Now, if the source code is hidden so that people can't look at the routines, then what do we, why wouldn't we just go ahead and look at the source code and verify and find such routines like the ones you suggest you were writing?
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, we have these election systems. We have all these voting machines out here that the American voting machine companies are selling. If there was vote rigging software built into them, would we not be able to just inspect the source code and see routines such as yours?
Well, you should, but once you compile it, you can't see anything.
Okay.
All you see is an EXE that everything's hidden.
Okay, and the other problem, as I understand it, is that we're not allowed to inspect the source code.
Right, that's kind of silly, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. Now,
kind of a trust me thing.
Yeah, trust, but verify, but we don't get to verify. Hey, Clint, why did you not report this earlier? I know you gave me an affidavit on December 6th, 2004. Why didn't you say anything about this to anybody earlier?
Well, I didn't really think it was possible that people would be stupid enough to allow for machines to be on the market that had no way to verify them and the source code wasn't inspected. A beginning programmer in a beginning class would know that's just silly. A bank would never accept that for an ATM machine.
Right.
You know, you wouldn't do your checking account in it if there was no way to verify if it did it right.
Right. Nonetheless, we've got voting machines that are sold out all over the country, and they are not verified because these voting machine companies have almost miraculously, I don't know how they pulled it off, but they were able to claim this is proprietary software and you're not allowed to look at it.
Yes, proprietary software that adds to one.
Exactly. And you know what, we're talking about the most basic element of our democracy, folks, the vote, which we don't even know if we can trust it. We're going to talk a little bit later with some folks who have been following what actually happened in November of 2004. Andy Stevenson and Larissa Alexandrovna will be here to talk about that. But, Clint, I'm told, by the way, that I should give out the number to take calls because things are going apparently so well. We wanted to make sure we could make things a little bit more difficult and see if we could get some calls for you. Don't laugh at me, Clint Curtis. We're talking with whistleblower software programmer Clint Curtis, and if you'd like to try your luck and call the premiere episode of The Brad Show, try dialing 314-781-6540. We have no idea who will answer or if we'll get you on the air. Now, some other extraordinary claims in your affidavit. You talked about a guy by the name of Hai Lin Nee, Henry Nee. Can you talk a little bit about him?
Well, Henry Nee was working at Yang when I was working at Yang. He actually was the quality control programmer. Every code that went through the company, whether it was to NASA, ExxonMobil, Department of Transportation, anywhere, wherever it went through, it had to go through him first for inspection. If you wanted to add something, it added before it actually got distributed. And the odd thing about Henry was a spy, which... Henry was a spy. And that would sound like kind of a big claim, but when I initially reported the fact that, you know, he was getting all this information in from NASA, and it was being handed over to him and shipped overseas to the brother of the owner of the company... You know, at that time, he was an illegal alien. What they arrested him for in 2004, I believe, was after I complained enough, they started investigating him and found out that, sure enough, Henry was shipping Hellfire missile chips to the capital of Communist China.
Now, I had seen that you had reported on Henry Nee to the Florida Department of Transportation authorities. I guess you were working there after you left Yang, and you complained about a lot of the stuff that you saw at Yang.
Right. I told them everything, and some things they cared about, some things they didn't. So.
Okay. And, I've been reporting on this story, as you know, and probably a lot of our listeners know, at bradblog.com for about 6 months. And I have to say, and there's a lot more to your story, but I will say that in that 6 months, I have yet to find a hole in your story. And, in fact, you did just pass the polygraph test, which is interesting. On the other hand, our friend Representative Tom Feeney, the folks at Yang Enterprises, Inc., and their attorneys have said one thing after another that hasn't really added up. For one thing, they originally had said you were a disgruntled employee. Clint Curtis, aren't you a disgruntled employee? Isn't that why you made these claims?
No, never was a disgruntled employee, but that's kind of the catch-all when someone tells about you is they must be a disgruntled employee. But the only reason they couldn't get away with that on me was because when I first found out how bad everything was, you know, that Feeney was involved in, I mean, these are little things. There's, you know, boat rigging. There's also basically dismantling the civil service system in Florida.
Right.
There's selling contracts to, you know, whoever your buddies are, that kind of thing. But when I found out what he was up to and what he was about, then I quit. Turned in my resignation right after Christmas, because, you know, you don't resign before Christmas. That's just bad.
It would be unchristian of you.
it just seems bad. Anyway, so I resigned right after Christmas, and they begged me to stay around longer while they found a replacement, because they said it was hard to find a programmer replacement, although I don't know why. So I ended up staying 8 weeks instead of two to help them find things. And then at the end of that, they threw me a big party, which was odd. Also, at that place, because we had people coming and going very regularly, and most times they would, instead of throwing them a party, they would have security escort them to the door kind of thing, a little on the rude side. For me, they threw a big party, and I got a card that says, come back anytime. You know, we'll miss you.
Yeah, in fact, that was signed. It was on bradblog.com. It was signed by Mrs. Yang, the CEO of the company. She said the door will be open for you anytime.
Even signed by the spy.
Okay, listen.
How many people have a spy sign their going away card?
Since I know that there are a lot of bradblog.com listeners out of there who know this story a little bit, let's see if we can make things harder and take a call from someone who may want to ask you a question, whether we're going to be able to do it or not. Let's see. My engineer, Ken, is looking at me strange. Can we take a call, Ken? Do we have time? No. He says no. After the break, he says take a call. You know, I should add that my engineer, Ken, voted for George W. Bush. So he may be trying to, he's
Which Ken still
shifty.
Vote for George
he's a shifty-looking guy, and he... He may be trying to sabotage the whole affair. Anyway, after the break, we will take a call, says Ken, the Bush voter. How far are we from the break, Ken? I don't even have a clock in here. He says 2.5 minutes. Okay. What the hell were we talking about, Clint?
Going away party.
Ah, yeah, right. The going away party. So that was just one of the things that they've tried to say to use against you. As a matter of fact, they said Henry Nee, the spy, who was in fact charged in 2004 on charges related to espionage, in fact, he never worked at Yang, according to Mrs. Yang. Is that correct? He never worked there.
In fact, recently in a deposition, she said he never worked there. And the fact that they had actually billed the Department of Transportation $38,000 for him,
right,
even though supposedly he was never being paid by them, was as a courtesy to DOT to show them how hard they were working on the contract.
Are you talking about the weekly time records that we also posted online and that showed that were signed by Henry Nee? They were on Yang stationery. They were sent to the Florida Department of Transportation, showed that he worked 40 to 60 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
They charged Florida Department of Transportation, and still to this day, Yang says he never worked there. Is that correct?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Slight complication in this story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, we're going to pick up more of this after the break, which we're coming up on very shortly. Thanks for bearing with me. It's my first time out, and we'll be back after a minute or two. Thanks, Clint.
Thank you.
ABC Satellite Radio Network. We're talking with Clint Curtis, whistleblower, software programmer, who claims that in 2000 he was asked by Congressman, now U.S. Congressman, sitting on the U.S. House Judiciary Committee, Tom Feeney, to create vote rigging software. Hey, everybody out there, thanks for bearing with us here. This is a pretty incredible thing. We were asked about 24 hours ago to see if we could get up and on the air. I've never done this in my life. As a matter of fact, I've got a cold, and I happen to be on traveling on the road, found somebody who said, "Oh yeah, I can get you on the air," and it's costing us a few dollars, but we think it's worth it to make some noise out there, even if we're going to have hiccups and glitches, even if it sounds like, I'm not sure, but it might sound like we're on the phone. We're not on the phone. We're live in the studio, for whatever that's worth. And as a matter of fact, we missed our raw radio tag at the end of the last hour. Hey, Ken, can we cue up that raw radio tag? It's pretty cool. It's the only thing we actually have prepared. Try it, Ken.
Raw radio, radio, radio.
Wow, that is cool. I don't know if you could hear it. It was pretty soft in the background, but these guys said they could hear it all right. Okay, anyway, sorry, Clint. Before we go back to Clint Curtis, software programmer and whistleblower, since he's a Republican, I'm going to make him really uncomfortable with this paid ad that has just come in. Thank you, guys. By the way, listener supported, other than these ads that are trickling in, we really appreciate it. So stop by rawstory.com, make a donation there. Stop by bradblog.com, make a donation. If we get some more money, man, we can do this in a professional way so we sound like we know what we're doing. Anyway, are you sick of playing defense on gay marriage? I know I am. Clint, are you sick of playing defense on gay marriage?
Huh?
Yeah. Do you ever wonder why the good guys don't attack Republican hypocrisy? Well, blogactive.com and Pam's House Blend. Pam's a great blogger at pamspalding.com, I should add. They have spotlighted Practice What You Preach, which is a Texas group that is taking the fight to hypocritical Republicans with a web ad that you have to see. I'd love to see it, but I can't get on the Internet. So you can visit practicewhatyoupreach.org and help them put Republican hypocrites on the defensive for a change. Hey, John Byrne, editor of Raw Story, if you're out there, send a message and tell me how that ad is. I haven't seen it. I'd like to see it. So check out practicewhatyoupreach.org, and thank you guys for supporting Brad Blog. No, where are we? The Brad Show on Raw Radio. Thanks a bunch. Clint Curtis, back to your story. The fella who you mentioned, no, you didn't mention it here today, but the fella who you told your extraordinary story about back in 2000, Raymond Lemmy. He was the the Inspector General at the Florida Department of Transportation. He worked out of their office. You told him your story back in 2001, and some pretty incredible things happened a few years later. Can you give us an idea of what happened with Ray Lemmy?
Well, initially, he was really excited about it and started working on it, and then he quit. Just quit working on it. So I continued to pester him, which is kind of what I do, to make him do something about it. And eventually I pestered him and the head of the IG's department, which is just like a departmental arm of the Attorney General's office.
Did he give you any idea why he quit? You say you pestered him about it. Why did he quit working on it?
Well, he did later. In fact, it was as I continued to pester him about it, finally they fired both myself and the manager of the department that had gone up and told them about, you know, the overbilling and the legal alien and everything else. And so we filed whistleblower suits. And during that, there was an investigation with a newspaper called the Daytona Beach News Journal.
Right.
And it did a small thing, and they were getting inside information from somewhere in the IG's office. And Lemmy later told me that he was that leak. He was the one who was going and telling him that, you know, they wanted to investigate it, but they'd gotten, you know, word from political parties higher up that they were just to let it go.
Lemmy told you that they got word from higher-ups?
Yes.
Was that
political pressure to stop the investigation? There would be no investigation. Just let it go.
Was that when you were still working at FDOT?
Well, apparently that's when he was told, yes.
Wow. Okay, and that's what he told you. Now, let's fast forward to a little bit later down the road. You have been fired by the Florida Department of Transportation, and I think you and another whistleblower were both fired on the same day, correct?
Right.
And did they give you guys any reason, by the way, for that?
No, not really. Just didn't need us anymore. It was the day after I sent an email to the head of the IG's office named Cecil Bragg.
Right.
Sent him a letter saying, nothing's getting done here. This is the information. Could you give me an update? So they gave me an update, kind of. Update is, here's the door, you know.
Okay. So
that's
you,
how much we care.
So you got fired.
Right.
You're out.
I'm out.
A few years later now, and I know that there was some whistleblower suits, and, of course, we got to keep moving, so I'm going to try to move it up ahead here. By the way, you guys can try your luck at 314-781-6540. I don't even know if there's anybody here to answer that phone, but you know, give it a shot. We'll see if we can get some questions for you, Clint, and you can come back when we've got this figured out correctly. It'll take us a week or two, but we'll figure it out. Okay, so a few years, moving the clock a few years ahead, you're fired. You're working where in mid-June of 2003?
Couldn't get a job as a programmer, so I end up having to stock shelves at a dollar store that's about 2 blocks away from DOT. And lo and behold, the fellow I turned the stuff into originally, Ray Lemmy, shows up and wants to interview me some more. He's still wanting to work on the case. He can't do it officially, he says. You know, officially the case is closed, it's done, they're not going to do anything with it. But he's intrigued enough and I guess just gutsy enough to want to take it on himself and investigate himself. So he comes to me and he keeps asking me all these questions, you know, have I heard this name, have I heard that name, do I know the company's name where Feeney and Yang were both, you know, locked into the same company, this kind of thing. And most of the things I don't know. Those the names he asked, I don't know. I give him what I have. You know, he asked more about the vote fraud. He asked more about the spy situation, you know, how much information came out of NASA. Were there any people inside of NASA that, you know, dealt with Henry, you know, that sort of thing.
Now, you mentioned NASA because Yang had contracts with NASA at the time as well, and you had said in your affidavit that Henry the spy, as you call him,
right,
was inserting wiretapping modules into the code, into the database that was being given to NASA by Yang.
Actually, that was the code that was given to DOT. They had a We wrote them a little program where they could take all of their information that they have to file, bridge reports, evacuation routes, all that kind of thing.
Right.
They send that up to DOT.
Right.
And so we gave them a program that would allow them to crush it, encrypt it, and send it up to DOT, so it's safe.
Okay.
It wasn't all that safe because Henry inserted a module which actually directed a copy of that right into Yang.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The same thing that we wrote for DOT, we were also writing a similar type of program at NASA in the Maximo database.
All right, we're going to find out what happened to Ray Lemmy in a second, but why the heck do you think nobody's investigating this other than, apparently me, but also some, there's been a few newspaper articles lately about it, but why is this not being investigated?
I have no idea.
These are remarkable claims. A guy, a Chinese illegal alien, is putting on, is inserting wiretapping modules into software. They claim he doesn't work there. We know that he works there. He's an illegal alien. He's been charged with spying. Where is Henry Nee, by the way, Clint Curtis?
Henry Nee is still in Florida, as opposed to being thrown out of the country or deported for shipping missile chips to China for 20 times.
Right, which he pled guilty to back in just October of 2004. He pled guilty to one of these charges. He says in his plea agreement, we had some of this up at Brad Blog, that he was, it was a slow year. He only did it 10 to 20 times in the past year, and yet he was given a $100 fine and a 3 years probation.
3 years probation.
Right. So he's still around Oviedo, Florida,
right.
And I don't know if Tom...
I think he's been made other promises as long as he's quiet, too, because he basically told me later, there was a private investor who came down and wanted to check out my claims.
Yeah.
So we went to Henry's house, knocked on the door, and lo and behold, Henry was there. So we actually talked to him again, and he seems to be under pressure. As long as he's quiet, he's going to get a green card. He gets to stay.
Okay, no problem there. Do we know if he was protected by anybody, like, say, Congressman Tom Feeney?
Sounds pretty much like he has a lot of political influence, doesn't it?
Congressman Tom Feeney, by the way, I don't think I mentioned it in the first part of the show here. He was Jeb Bush's running mate for governor back in 1994 when Jeb ran for Congress. When Jeb ran for governor the first time, he was also most famously the guy who said in 2000, back when Feeney was at that time the Speaker of the House of Florida, during the 2000 election mess, he said that, we don't care what the Supreme Court does, we're going to award Florida's electors to George W. Bush, no matter what. And I should point out that Mr. Feeney is now in the U.S. Congress, sitting on the U.S. House Judiciary Committee. Real quick, because we've got just a few minutes, I think, before we have to go to a break, but I wouldn't know. I'm just making this stuff up as I go. Tell us real quick, Clint, if you can, what the heck happened to Ray Lemmy? You last saw him in mid-June 2003.
Yes, he kept coming and visiting with me, and in about the middle of June 2003, he came, and he was actually happy, which was very odd for this fellow. He was never that happy. And he had his papers, he had his notebook, and he said that he had just about got the case all finished. He'd tracked the corruption all the way to the top, and in a couple weeks he was going to break it, keep my ears open, I'd be thrilled with the results.
That was June of 2003.
June 2003.
And what happened in July of 2003?
First of July 2003, he's found dead in a hotel room in Valdosta, Georgia.
What was he doing in Valdosta, Georgia?
There is no reason he should have been in Valdosta, Georgia. The only thing that strikes my mind is that if you die of a suicide in Florida, there's an autopsy, mandatory. If you die of a suicide in Valdosta, Georgia, there's nothing.
And in fact, the police did rule this a suicide, and there's a lot of very strange stuff with that suicide and with that police record. I've been combing over it for quite a while. One of the most remarkable things, and I'll just jump in here since I did some of the reporting on this, is that the police ruled it a suicide, and they said that there would be no pictures from the crime scene. They took pictures, but there would be none because there was a failure in the camera's flash memory cards. Well, a few weeks ago, guess what appeared out there on the Internet? The photographs of Ray Lemmy in that Valdosta, Georgia motel room. We've confirmed that those pictures are real. They're good. They're now up on bradblog.com. We wonder what the heck happened. Valdosta police tells me that they reopened the case after interest on the internet. I wonder what they were referring to. So they reopened the case in December, and I'm getting signals. I'll have to tell you what happened. They closed the case shortly thereafter because they spoke with somebody at the Florida Department of Transportation. They won't tell me who they talked to. I'm trying to figure it out. As a matter of fact, they won't talk to me at all anymore. We'll talk a little bit about that after this break, and let's see if Ken is able to play our raw story, raw radio sting here on The Brad Show. Thanks for listening, guys.
listening to the IBC Radio Network. And you're listening to The Brad Show, Raw Radio Live. And Brad is actually on remote studio right now, so he's not actually broadcasting through our facilities. He will be shortly within the weeks to come. So any audio quality is not us. Here we go with The Brad Show, Raw Radio Live on the IBC Radio Network.
Sudden, Ken. Remember we talked about that bringing the thing down, and he's making all kinds of signs at me. Yes? It's okay? Okay. Ken says it's okay, and apparently everything's okay. Quint, you still there?
I'm still here.
All right. You be quiet for a second, because I am told, and I don't even know where these people are sending these things in from, frankly, because I don't have any internet connection, but we hear from Tom in Santiago, Chile, that we are loud and clear on the net down there in Santiago, Chile. Congratulations, he says. Hey, thanks, Tom. We also hear from Ray in Colorado Springs. He wants to let us know that people are listening. They are? Clint, we're in more trouble than I thought. People are listening to what we're saying. That's good. Okay. Real quickly, in our last 5 minutes here, we were talking about Raymond Lemmy, who died in a Valdosta, Georgia motel room. He was investigating, he was looking into the information that you had reported when you were working at the Florida Department of Transportation concerning the charges that Tom Feeney asked you to create boat rigging software, concerning the fact that Yang Enterprises, Inc. was overbilling FDOT. And by the way, in February of this year, Ray Lemmy's report came out and indeed verified that Yang was overbilling FDOT by hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that was another point in your favor. And, of course, you most recently passed the lie detector test. Has Tom Feeney taken a lie detector test, Clint Curtis?
I'm pretty sure Tom Feeney couldn't take a lie detector test.
I would invite Tom Feeney to call into our lines here at 314-781-6540. We would love to talk to Tom, and, of course, we would love to talk to the rest of you. I understand the phones are ringing, but we can't get you on the air. So if that changes, we'll get you on the air. Are you having fun yet, Clint? That's why they call it raw radio, you know.
Very raw, huh?
Yeah, apparently. So, Tom Feeney, never passed a lie detector test. Do you think he would like to take one?
I'm sure he wouldn't.
Why wouldn't he, if he's telling the truth and if you're a liar?
Because he's not telling the truth, which pretty much been shown over and over and over again.
Now, so these claims that you're making about him are pretty extraordinary, Clint. If I were him and if you were lying about me, as he suggests you are, I would sue you. Has he threatened to sue you in any way?
Not at all.
And yet, I understand that he has threatened to sue a newspaper down in Seminole County, the Seminole Chronicle, after they wrote an article that said, basically reported what was in your affidavit, reported the testimony that you gave to Congress, to members of the U.S. House Judiciary Committee, the video for which is up at Brad Blog. They're, okay, yeah, they're giving me signs. They're, we ought to have like a microphone in here. We ought to have a professional production. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, where was, you tell me, where was I, Clint?
You were talking about Tom Feeney suing people.
Ah, yes, thank you. He's threatened to sue the Seminole Chronicle, his attorneys did, and in a nearly identical letter, Yang's attorneys also threatened to sue the Seminole Chronicle for merely reporting what was in your affidavit, and yet he's never threatened to sue you.
Well, there is a law called Sarbanes-Oxley,
yeah,
that was enacted, which says that if you retaliate against a whistleblower that's telling the truth in relation to security matters, that is a criminal fine and criminal prosecution. You can do 10 years in prison and $1 million fine. So I'm pretty sure that's keeping them at bay, because the minute they launch anything, you know, more than they already have, then we will take care of it.
We will take care of it. Are you planning on suing Tom Feeney, Clint Curtis?
Yes, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's
if he has the guts to come out and say anything, which he hasn't, of course. He's been very shy about such things. He speaks through anonymous attorneys. So if he ever had the guts to actually come out and say anything, then we would be able to do something.
Are you trying to pick a fight with Tom Feeney?
I would like to see Tom Feeney investigated.
Okay.
And I think everyone else should, too. They should make sure that their election system works correctly. And they should make sure that, you know, if they're going to sit around and talk about providing for the security of America, that they're not really selling the technology out the back door.
Hey, well said, Mr. Curtis. We're going to have you back once we get this show done correctly and we figure it out. I want to thank you for
being our first ever guest on The Brad Show on Raw Radio. Thanks, Clint.
Raw Radio. Radio.
Thank you.